So again, welcome. My name is Marianne Fieberdar, and I'm on the Central Regional Council of the Anthroposophical Society. And this is a presentation for the Karma Project, which is our current ongoing online technological study group that we have, really looking into this theme of karma and reincarnation. Rudolf Steiner spoke about that as being a really important one for us to take up. And so we're trying to take it up, and we have study calls as well as presentation calls. And this is a presentation call, and Alberto will in a few moments introduce our speaker, Fred Amrine, which for many of you probably doesn't really need any introductions, but be that as it may, there might be new people who will be meeting him for the first time. What we tend to do as well is do a roll call of who is on the call, and what I'd like to do and suggest, and I think we do that before the verse, is that right? Friends, yes. Okay, so what I will do is I will call out the letters of the alphabet, and if your name begins with that letter, please say your name and the location of where you are calling from, so what city, state you are calling in, so we get a sense of who is calling in from not only our region, but even maybe beyond our region. Is that clear to everybody? I'm hoping so. I'll see the nodding heads on the visuals that I do have. So we'll start with the letter A.
Alberto Oya, Ann Arbor.
Thank you, Alberto. Welcome. And there was someone else?
My name is Andrea. I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Thank you, Andrea. Welcome.
Thank you.
Any other A's? B.
Hi, my name is Barb. I'm from Grand Rapids.
Great. Thank you, Barb. Any other B's? And we can move on to C.
This is Carol Nickel from Minnesota.
Great. Hi, Carol. C. Hi. Any other C's?
Yes. My name is Carolyn, and I'm from Mansfield, Texas. That's in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Excellent. Thank you.
And this is Camille from Frankfort, Michigan.
Perfect. Hi, Camille.
C. Hi.
Can we move on to D?
Hi, this is Deanna from St. Louis.
Great. Thank you, Deanna.
Dawn from New Richmond.
Dawn. Oh, hi, Dawn. Excellent. Hello. D.
Hello, David, everyone. David.
Sorry.
Yep.
This is David. Dave Howerton from St. Louis.
Good. Thank you, David. And another David Kavish.
Yes, David Kavish from Chicago.
Great. Welcome, David.
Chicago. Hey.
Did you hear David Voigt?
Oh, David Voigt.
Yeah,
David.
There's a few people with us here.
Okay, great. That's good. Are we done with the D's? E.
Hi, this is Eleonora from Singapore.
Whoa, holy cow. All right. Welcome.
Thank you.
Any other E's?
My picture go off pretty soon.
F. G. H.
Hi, it's Hazel from Chicago.
Great. Thank you, Hazel. H. I. J.
Hi, this is
Jeff.
This is Jeff from just north of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Welcome. Make sure we mute if we're not talking. Good. Jays? Any other Jays?
Joni from Traverse City.
Joni from Rapid City?
Traverse City.
Traverse City. Excellent. Thank you.
Joseph from Menominee.
Joseph from Menominee in the other room. That would be my husband. Yay. Kay.
Hi, Carl Fredrickson from Northfield, Minnesota.
And Renata, I'm just going to squeeze in here.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other Ks?
Yes. Kathleen Reagan from Roseville, Minnesota.
Perfect. Kathleen, thank you. L.
Loanne from Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Excellent, Loanne. Pulling in from New Mexico.
Laura from St. Louis.
Laura, excellent. Thank you. Welcome.
Lisa Dalton from Fort Worth.
There you are, Lisa. Thank you. L. M. Marianne, Menominee. Several Marys, several M's.
Mary Tom from Chicago.
Excellent. Thanks, Mary Tom. Welcome.
Mihai from Chicago.
And Mihai calling in. Thank you, Mihai. Welcome. Any other M's? No. N?
Nancy from East Lansing.
Excellent. East Lansing. Thank you, Nancy. N-O? P?
Paulette Arnold from Evanston, Illinois.
Oh, great, Paulette. Excellent. P. Any other P's? Q's. Huh. That'd be rare. R.
Rich Luma from Los Angeles.
Oh, there we go. We got a Westerner. Great.
Richard Halford, Delray Beach, Florida.
Whoa, Nelly. Great. Welcome.
Ross from Chicago.
Hello, Ross. Welcome.
Says Boyd Collins from Fort Worth, Texas.
Thank you, Boyd. Any other R's? S's.
Scott and Lisa Grubbs from Lowry Crossing, Texas.
Excellent. Welcome. S, any others? Or any previous letter, S. T.
Anderson from Minnetonka.
You see, I muted it. I can't hear.
What was that, Anderson?
Sheila Anderson.
Sheila Anderson. Excellent. Okay, gotcha. Because the S. Excellent. S. T.
I'm back now.
Travis Wiley from.
Wonderful. Hi, Travis.
I'm trying to find the.
T. U. V. W. I heard that. Where the hell's the mute? X, Y, and Z. Very nice. We've got a great group here. If you haven't made your name known, we are thinking of you. But we do want to get cracking with this exciting presentation that we have. And so I'm going to turn it over to Alberto so he can introduce. Oh, no, first, we've got our verse. Lisa.
Good evening, everyone. I am going to read a verse that was written by Rudolf Steiner to Ida Wegman on his birthday, February 27, 1924. He addressed it to my Misa. Hearts will read karma when hearts learn to read the word which shapes things in human lives. When hearts learn to utter the word which shapes things in the human world.
Would you kindly repeat that, because parts of it aren't clear?
Yes. Everyone's on mute. Thank you. Hearts will read karma When hearts learn to read the word which shapes things in human lives. When hearts learn to utter the word which shapes things in the human world.
Thank you, Lisa. So now it's Alberto to introduce our guest, Fred.
Okay, so I would like to welcome Fred Amrine to tonight's online lecture meeting. Most of you probably have heard of Fred already. He's very active in our anthroposophical circles. He happens to be Arthur Thurnau Professor in German Studies at the University of Michigan, right here in Ann Arbor. So I consider Fred a friend. But he has dedicated his whole life to study, translate, and write about Steiner's work. And in particular... Please mute yourself.
Maybe. I don't know. Look, I don't know what's going to happen. I may get fired tomorrow. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, just take it one day at a time.
Yeah.
So you're going to be able to keep your room for a while at least? Or?
Yeah, that's the plan.
You're going to get fired tonight if you don't mute your
phone.
That's what
Harriet Walker said to do.
Please mute your phone.
I'm trying to see who is speaking to mute that person.
Yep. Well, we're slow. Get something to eat. One last time, I get my treat.
No, I've got to. I'm about
Does
to go to bed.
Anybody recognize the voice?
Oh, okay. Conference call.
Yeah.
So 7:30.
Okay. I think I recognize.
Yeah, that's office.
I think I just muted the person. Okay. Apologies, everyone. Fred. It's already 8:30, so I think without further ado, I would like to welcome you. Thank you so much for taking the time, and go ahead and get start, please.
Hello, everybody. Can you all hear me? Yes? All right. Wonderful.
Yes.
It's really a great honor and pleasure to speak to you all tonight. I'm thrilled to know that so many people have dialed in from all over the country. That's really lovely. As many of you probably know already, Steiner said privately that talking about karma in a way that was appropriate for the West was actually his life's mission. And certainly there's no other sequence of lectures that approaches the 82 lectures of karmic relationships in size and scope. So they're arguably the crown of anthroposophy. And one approaches the subject with a certain trepidation, needless to say. The other reason I'm approaching this with just a little trepidation, and I apologize in advance if this is the case, is that I have given this lecture, or at least something very close to this lecture, before in the past with my friend Ted Rozelle. I did a number of karma workshops in various places. And so if you've heard this lecture already, I'm so sorry. It has to have been 3 or 4 years, so maybe you've forgotten, or maybe you won't mind hearing it again. Of course, there are 82 lectures total in karmic relationships, but I'm actually going to talk mostly about the beginning of the cycle, and in particular, about the ways in which one should read those 82 lectures. Now, I'm going to see if I can swap Are you all seeing Steiner's lectures on karma relationships in 1924 and so forth?
Yes.
Of course, yes. I can't hear anyone. I hope you're seeing this list. Now, you see, I've actually numbered the lectures, 1 through 82. Do you see on the left-hand margin there? And then across this schematic, of course, the lecture number, the date, the location. The location in the Gesamtausgabe, that's the German edition. And then the corresponding lecture in the Rudolf Steiner Press edition of the translation of these lectures. Now, a couple of remarkable things are immediately obvious when you look at this. First is lecture number 1, January the 25th in Bern, is missing from the Gesamtausgabe. That was there in an earlier edition in 1958. And earlier, but they dropped it for some reason in more recent German editions. So the very first lecture is actually missing from the German. And if you look over on the right, you'll see that actually the first three lectures in the sequence are in volume 6 of the English edition. And I'll explain very soon why it's that's so very unfortunate, but it's ultimately important that one reads these karma lectures in the right sequence, and in the result is that a remarkable pattern emerges, and that's really what I'm going to lecture about tonight. Now, the second lecture, January the 28th in Zurich, is supposedly an incomplete manuscript. Although I must say, I certainly would never have guessed it from looking at that lecture. Now, if you go down further, you'll see that lecture 39 is missing from the English editions. And that was actually published in a separate volume. It was called The Festivals and Their Meaning and so forth, but it's not included among the karma lectures. And that's very unfortunate. It is included in the second volume of the German. And then finally, the very last lecture, September the 28th, 1924, is included in the fourth volume, the German edition, but it's not included in the English. It was published in a separate lecture, a translation by George Adams, the Last Address, it was called. This chart is actually in each of the volumes that I'll describe to you in a second. Go back. I hope you're seeing karmic relations again. Now,
yes.
For reasons that we'll see, it's of the utmost importance to read the karma lectures in the right sequence. And if one reads them in that right sequence, an extraordinary pattern emerges. And again, that's really what my talk is about mostly. It's about that extraordinary pattern. The extant translations, the Rudolf Steiner Press translations, are paradoxically very good. There's a sense in which one doesn't want to complain about them at all, because it's a very justifiable theory of translation that one translates the sense rather than more literally. To my mind, they aren't really very accurate. They're more like elegant summaries of what Steiner says. And they're both more elegant than his actual language. But also, of course, there's a tremendous amount of detail that's missing. And so I've started to translate, to retranslate these lectures. And in those translations, I've tried to be faithful, although that's often very, very difficult. So here are the new translations. There are three that are available already. The first two make sense. They're the missing lectures. They're the things that are missing in the English edition. So KR82, KR stands, of course, for Karmic Relationships, the last address. This is actually available on Amazon. And the way you find it is to search under Amrine Karmic. That's that will pop it up, guaranteed. And you can read for free if you have Prime. If you don't have Prime, they're available for a very nominal fee. So this is a translation of the last address that is a standalone publication. And likewise, I've translated the 39th lecture, which is very extraordinary. I call it in the subtitle, The Missing Lecture. And that's also available on Amazon. And there also, you should search under Amrine Karmic. And finally, I actually finished this today. I was hoping to finish it a bit sooner. I've done the first three lectures and called them archetypal karmic phenomena. And as of about 7:30, it was available as an ebook on Amazon. I think that it'll be available as a published book very, very soon, maybe even later tonight, or certainly tomorrow sometime. Again, scan under Amrine Karmic. And again, you can read it for free if you have Prime. So those are the three translations that I've done, the last address, the missing lecture, and the first three, karmic archetypal karmic phenomenon. All right. Let's begin the lecture proper, and I want to start by talking about something that I'll call evolutionary recapitulation. Evolutionary recapitulation. The main place that one sees this, although it's certainly not the only place, is in the book that I call The Secret Doctrine. I think this is how it should be translated, but it's also known as An Outline of Esoteric Science. And there you'll recall in that horrible and wonderful chapter 4 that every new evolutionary phase begins with a relatively quick symbolic, not literal, but symbolic recapitulation of the earlier stage of evolution. Now, this is something that is known as the ontogenetic law, and it's really the fundamental principle of the Waldorf curriculum, that little fifth graders are Romans and so forth and so on, when they go on to high school, they experience the revolutions, that one recapitulates symbolically in a short period of time the whole of human evolution. This actually in the 19th century was held to be a biological phenomenon. It was known as neoteny, whereby in the embryological development of all creatures, humans included, you see phases of earlier evolutionary stages that are quickly and, as it were, symbolically recapitulated. For example, the human embryo actually has gills. The human embryo is a reptile for a very brief period of time. So this is an important law, keep it very much in mind. We're going to come back to it right away. Take, for example, Steiner's cycle, Anthroposophy and Introduction. This was actually one of the first cycles that Steiner gave after the Christmas conference in 1924. And it's extraordinary to think that that is an accurate translation of the German title. It's extraordinary to think that somehow he would need to introduce Anthroposophy in January 1924. But in fact, he takes up the content of Anthroposophy in a remarkable way. In Barfield's preface, Barfield translated it. In Barfield's preface, he says ever so rightly that that actually he's turned Theosophy, the book Theosophy, inside out in this cycle of lectures, Anthroposophy, in Introduction. So now, there's something that's important for two reasons, right? First of all, that he's recapitulated that earlier moment, right? Theosophy, the book Theosophy, is of course from very early in his career. So he, beginning this new phase after the Christmas conference, he feels the need to recapitulate the content of Theosophy, but not simply verbatim, right? But rather turned inside out. One wants to see that now the inner relationships as opposed to the outer ones. And this is what happens in the Karma lectures. It's, of course, right after the Christmas conference, the first Karma lecture, what I take to be the first Karma lecture, is January 25th. So it's not even a month after the end of the Christmas conference. After the Christmas conference, Steiner begins those lectures by recapitulating symbolically the earliest phases of his own work within the context of reincarnation and karma. Now, let me show you how that works out. Now, you see what I've done here, down this dividing line, this dividing line down the middle is the Christmas conference, right? A real watershed moment in the evolution of Anthroposophy. So, in the Karma lectures, he takes the work, the very first work that he did, namely those introductions to Grotian science, right? It's GA1. And he recapitulates it by offering a Gurtian phenomenology of karma. Perhaps you have the first three lectures very much in mind, but in case you don't, let me just recapitulate very, very quickly how that works. So in all three of those initial lectures, he starts by talking about two fundamentally different kinds of human encounters that we have, just everyday meeting people on the street. And he says, in the one case, one meets a person and is enthralled by them. And one daydreams about them, one dreams about them at night. One can't get rid of them in a certain sense. If one's young, one wants to emulate them, and so forth and so on. And he says, this is an archetypal phenomena that reveals something very sublime behind it. This is working in through the portal of the moon, which is the portal of necessity, of earlier karma. This is someone with whom one shared earlier earthly incarnations. Now, on the other hand, there's a person, one encounters a person and one judges them purely externally. One has a kind of aesthetic judgment, Steiner even says, about them. And there is sun karma at work. That's the portal of the sun raying in from the future. That's someone with whom we haven't previously experienced karma. He says some very extraordinary things that actually at higher levels of initiation, when actually begins a conversation with the person's angel, that the angels are standing behind and so forth and so on. But in any case, what's important for our purposes now is that these first three lectures, all three of them, are a Gurtian phenomenology of karma. And this is a recapitulation of his earliest work. And Goethe, of course, immensely deepened turned outside in, if you will. Look what comes next. So in lecture four and following, we get a whole, really, four, say four through seven or eight or nine, we get a whole explanation of the lawfulness of karma. And he begins very much the way he does in GA number two, which is, of course, a theory of knowledge implicit in Goethe's world conception, is very much about Goethe as the great pioneer of the organic and the ways in which one needs to theorize the organic differently from the inorganic, right? It's really a different conception of the world altogether. And Goethe is the great pioneer of that. Well, he begins talking about the lawfulness of karma in exactly the same way. He starts by saying, look, in the inorganic realm, you have inorganic effects. They're simultaneous. They're local. But already with plants, you have to seek the cause of the effect in the broad cosmos, right? So he's expanding our view out. And in the case of animals, the cause is the constellation of stars before birth. And in order to understand cause there, one has to go not only spatially, but one needs to wander out, to go walking, as he says, in both space and time. And finally, with the human, one has passed we have the prior incarnation actually as the cause of present phenomena. So we have past physical causes of present effects in the physical. I hope you get the point. The parallel is quite uncanny, quite uncanny. So next phase of there's a GA number associated with this, but we know it was an important episode in Steiner's biography, his time at the worker school, which was, of course, Marxist. Inspired school. It wasn't founded by Marx and Engels, but they were very much Marxist. I'm sure you recall that Steiner was eventually fired because he refused to toe the orthodox Marxist line after the originator died. And sure enough, there, right in those early karma lectures, we get a study of the karma of Marx and Engels. It's really quite extraordinary. Let's go on. So then we have Truth and Science, GA3, The Philosophy of Freedom, which is GA4, the book on Nietzsche, which is GA5, and the book Goethe's Worldview, GA6, which is really about Goethe and evolutionary theory. And lo and behold, who are the first people that he talks about whose karma, whose earlier incarnations he discusses and whose karma he discusses? Eduard von Hartmann, Nietzsche, Darwin, Haeckel, and the aesthetician, the professor of aesthetics, Friedrich Theodor Fischer. Again, it's quite remarkable, these people that he had grappled with more externally in these early philosophical books, he now comes at in a profound and much deeper way. In Christianity is a mystical fact, GA8, we get a description of the way in which Christianity was a continuation of the mysteries and so forth. But for example, just one of many actually, in KR46, we get a vision of cosmic Christianity as a renewal of the mysteries, gnosis, and so forth. Again, an extraordinary deepening and turning inside out of this earlier book. In general, the 82 lectures on reincarnation and karma are an extraordinary answer to earlier really abortive theosophical attempts that he made in 1902. Steiner actually talks very openly about these abortive attempts in various of the karma lectures. What happened was that he became head of the German section of the Theosophical Society. And right, of course, he knew then that his real mission was to talk about reincarnation and karma. And so he proposed that the Theosophical Society immediately do engage in karma exercises of various sorts. And believe it or not, the old members of the Theosophical Society said flat no, they wouldn't do it. And he had to put I'll talk about this a little bit later. It really becomes a kind of sub rosa theme in anthroposophy. It's goes underground a bit and resurfaces here and there. But with these 82 lectures on karma and reincarnation, Steiner steps forth and he doesn't ask, he tells, right? He says, we're going to talk about reincarnation and karma now. And so, again, that's an extraordinary deepening and turning inside out that's a direct answer to something that happened earlier. I think I've made the point already, but knowledge of the higher worlds, GA 10, 1904, 1905, in KR 46, for example, he talks about karmic research as a path of thankfulness and so forth. So again, that's of course the beginning of knowledge of the higher worlds. So I think that's the last, yeah. So you see what I'm getting at. There's an extraordinary pattern that reveals itself if only one reads the karma lectures in sequence, right? It's very important that one reads them in sequence. Okay, so it's part of a whole new esoteric impulse. KR1, the first karma lecture, ends with a call for deepening anthroposophical work in the light of the Christmas conference, right? So that's what he ends very strongly on that note. KR2 ends by describing a living seed, Goethe again, that will do justice to the past and future of anthroposophy, which is to say, with its karma. And the third karma lectures transitions from a Goethean sensory moral phenomenology to a description of esoteric duty in light of the Christmas conference. We must penetrate into spiritual realities and make the impulse real, right? So the first three karma lectures end with this really impassioned call for action, right? To make the Christmas conference real. Another important reason, it ties the karma lectures directly to the Christmas conference, and it underscores the importance of the Christmas conference in general. This is, I think I've said this already. Let's see. Yeah, and Steiner tried immediately to institute the practical karma lectures, but the older theosophists, that's his language, resisted. He actually says the members of the society were not sufficiently mature to undergo karmic research. And therefore, he says, it remained a task which had to be pursued under the surface, as it were, of the anthroposophical streams. So sub rosa, right? Under the surface of the anthroposophical stream, performed as an obligation to the spiritual world. It's extraordinary, extraordinary that Steiner would say something like this. Both that the older theosophists resisted him, but he would say he had to do it sub rosa. He had to do it nevertheless. But now, after the Christmas conference, this real and living esotericism can and must be taken up, he says. Waiting would be a grave defect, right? So now is the time to do karmic research. What we call human destiny is therefore an affair of the gods. He really puts this karmic research very, very high, really at the summit, and describes it, karma, as a kind of caressing by the gods. It's extraordinary language in 37 and 41 and 43. Look what he says. You're caressed by someone who loves you. The caress is not matter at all. It is a process. You experience it inwardly in your soul. So it is when you look outwards into the spheres of the ether. The gods, in their love, caress the world. Isn't that a beautiful thought? Ah, so extraordinary. And really, in a way, the highest take on reincarnation and karma. We think so often of reincarnation and karma as sort of iron recompense and so forth and so on, but it's not that. It's more like grace. The gods, in their love, caress the world. And he says, the mood in which all teachings about karma should be received is one of piety, of reverence. Whenever one approaches a truth relating to karma, his soul should feel as though a part of the veil of Isis were being lifted. So that's the mood in which we're to pursue. Out of control here. Hang on. I think maybe that was the last slide. No, here's the last slide. So, self-knowledge through karma studies, will deepen our commitment to anthroposophy. The merger of the anthroposophical movement, Steiner was very much involved with that, and the Anthroposophical Society. Before the Christmas conference, Steiner didn't hold an office in the Anthroposophical Society. He wasn't even a member. But with the Christmas conference, he joined his destiny to that of the society. So the merger of the Anthroposophical movement and the Anthroposophical Society represents a promise to the spiritual world that must be fulfilled. Extraordinary. And then he says, actually, in 66, that demons had sealed his lips about karma, but the Christmas conference unsealed them. Extraordinary. We must return to our own germinal impulse. That's in 72. And karma studies are absolutely central to that. Okay, that's my lecture. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Is anybody there?
This is David Howerton. Thank you very much, Fred. That was beautiful. And thank you for all the work that you have put into this field. It's evident. Is there some questions out there that have been stirred by the experience of what Fred has shared with us tonight?
Hello?
Folks, we have a couple of ways we can operate with questions. There is on the bottom of your screen a chat bubble. And you can click that and write something in if you'd like. Or you can also raise your hand and be called on. Or if no one's speaking, you can simply unmute and start your question.
Could I ask also that people really speak up? For some reason, I can barely hear the audience. So if you really speak up, that would help a lot.
And Alberto here, I had to mute a couple of lines that were sending a lot of feedback. So I apologize for doing that, but for the sake of the whole group. But as Lisa said, there is a way to ask questions through the chat window.
So David, we have a couple of questions in the chat window, which you may not be able to see. Is that correct?
I cannot. Would you mind sharing them with us?
That'd be fine. So from Yashan Wang, I have a question. Does Steiner believe in God?
Wow.
That's a very good question. The short answer is yes, definitely. But he has a very much more complex picture of God. Certainly, you know, God is not for him the angry wizard of the Old Testament. When Steiner speaks of God, he's really a polytheist. He's really talking about all the hierarchies of angels and so forth, reaching up to the Father God, which is very, very high principle indeed. Steiner says that most people who feel that they experience God's voice, that they experience God personally, are actually hearing their angel. So that's one step up in the hierarchy, not 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 steps up.
Excellent. Thank you, Fred. I have one from Wendy, who's asking if you could please repeat the very last point that you made of your presentation. Thank you.
Repeat the last point. You mean this slide?
Yes, that's good. Yes.
Self-knowledge through karma studies will deepen our commitment to anthroposophy. Right? So that's clear. The merger of the anthroposophical movement and the anthroposophical society represents a promise to the spiritual world that must be fulfilled. Demons had sealed his lips. It's an extraordinary statement about karma, but the Christmas conference unsealed them. And finally, we must return to our own germinal impulse. Karma studies are central.
Thank you, Fred. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I will publish the material on the website as a PDF file, if you are okay with that, Fred.
Yes.
Great. So there's a question from Hazel regarding whether you plan to retranslate the entire 82 lectures for us.
thank you for asking. I suppose that eventually I'll do it, but no promises as to a schedule. It's going to take a long, long time. The lectures, Karmic Relationships 1-3, gave me fits, I have to say. They were really, really hard to translate. Beautiful, but very, very difficult. And I do have other work that I have to do. So eventually, yes.
Beautiful. I have another question from Yashang Wang, who's asking, he's got two questions. Is Jesus the same as the Maitreya, and are the demon reptilians Anunnaki?
No, Jesus is not the same as the Maitreya Buddha, although they cooperate in a mysterious way. And I have no idea what the other reptilian, I've already forgotten. I'm sorry.
That's okay. The Anunnaki.
I have no idea. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any, back to you, David, are there any other questions from folks on the phone? Or?
Hello, this is Sheila Donahue from Chicago. And Fred, thank you so much for this lecture. I've heard you many times live in Chicago, and this was just wonderful. I was wondering, what comes to your mind when you say the phrase, return to your germinal impulse?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Return to the.
I'm trying to put the words together. Yeah.
I think get back to the esoteric root. He actually says in the first, at the end of the second and the third karma lectures, I believe, that the Christmas conference was necessary. In part because the Anthroposophical Society had fallen away from its esoteric core, and that we have to get back to that germinal impulse. We have to get down to brass tacks. We have to, you know, find what's really down there at the root and return to it. I think that's what he has in mind.
Thank you.
Any other questions coming in?
This is Rich Luma in Los Angeles. The response to that last question, does that mean to go back to knowledge of the higher worlds?
Oh, certainly it means that, but not just that. He doesn't mean anything that specific. I think he means that one has to become a truly esoteric society, and, you know, much more important than what's in any book, one has to really live anthroposophy esoterically. That's what he says over and over and over again.
You know, I just had one other thought, and that is that beyond anthroposophists talking to themselves, it seems like there's a need to connect to the larger community, human community, society. I spent some time in Harlemville, and Gary Lamb is committed to working with educational institutions that have a common cause with Waldorf. And I, you know, that's an example of trying to carry anthroposophy into the wider world. Does that figure into what he's saying? Get back to our basics?
Well, he talks quite a bit about attacks on the society that are organized and self-conscious and powerful. And Steiner often wishes that the society were better represented in, let's call it, the public sphere, so that there would be more understanding of what anthroposophy is, and there would also be strong defenses of anthroposophy in that public sphere. I certainly resonate very strongly with any attempts to engage the public. I've tried to do that in my work as a professor at the university. I teach and translate Steiner and so forth very openly. Putting all these things up on Amazon is very intentional. I want them to be there for everyone to see. And so I resonate personally very, very strongly with that sentiment, very strongly indeed.
You know, I'm out here in Los Angeles in a community where Alfred North Whitehead's process theology is strong, the thinking. And there are people that are familiar with Waldorf or people who are familiar with biodynamic farming, but find, as we all know, many of Steiner's works is very daunting. And
Whitehead is very daunting. I don't think that Steiner's any more daunting than Whitehead.
That's true. But unfortunately, Whitehead is fashionable out here. So.
Yeah.
I have another question from Yashang. He's asking about, was Steiner a Christian?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, 100%. No questions.
Thank you. And comment from Marianne, question. Live anthroposophy esoterically, but also exoterically?
Well, of course. In the Karma lectures, he's really talking about deepening anthroposophical work. So on that particular occasion, he's talking about only one side of the equation. But of course, Steiner wants, I've already spoken to that. Steiner wants very, very strongly for anthroposophy to be represented in the public sphere. I mean, anthroposophy is a public mystery. I mean, in fact, he says that at the Christmas conference, they did away with the public-private distinction. There were not going to be any more private lectures, for example. Everything has to be public. And so yes, anthroposophy is thoroughly esoteric and exoteric at the same time. No question.
Thank you.
Just a follow-on to
that. I'm sorry. I got another interesting comment from Travis. He attends Unity Church in Little Rock, and he heard that founder of Unity, Charles Fillmore, proudly claimed that he was the reincarnation of the Apostle Paul. Does Steiner discuss the Apostle Paul in the Karma lectures? Thank you.
This is an extraordinary question. And the answer is no, but I think that Steiner planned very much to have a whole nother series of Karma lectures. Unfortunately, he fell ill and died. These 82 lectures are actually very Aristotelian. I don't know if that signifies to you. But he talks in the Karma lectures about there being actually two streams of people, Platonists and Aristotelians, seekers of Christ and seekers of Michael and so forth and so on. And there are hints in the last address, actually, that he's going to shift to talk now more about the Platonists, which is to say the seekers of Christ, and presumably, I don't know this, but presumably, talk about the apostles. But no, he does not mention the apostle, any of the apostles, in the Carmen lectures.
Thank you.
Hazel, I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit more about sun karma and moon karma.
Yeah, in 25 words or less, the basic distinction is moon karma is the karma of the past. So it's determinate. We can't change the past because we've done certain things in the past. We're karmically bound to meet with certain people. There's certain encounters that are going to take place and so forth. And that all comes through the portal of the moon. It's been recorded by the wise moon beings in something like books. And we read them, as it were, on our way into incarnation. Sun karma is karma of the future. It's karma that is being made. In that sense, is free. We're free to make new karma there. That's it in a nutshell.
And Fred, Alberto here. Can you also repeat what you said about when we meet a certain person? You know, the experience we have might mean moon versus sun karma.
Well, if you want to read about this, you can read it in the first three karma lectures, which I've just translated. I invite you to read there. It's really quite extraordinary. But he says that there are basically two kinds of encounters. There are people that we meet that we feel strongly tied to, that we don't describe their outer appearance, but we describe something inner that only we see, that we dream about them, we daydream about them. Young children want to emulate that person, and that person becomes their hero, he says, and so forth. And this is all evidence of strong moon karma, that something from the past, that there was a deep, well, all right, that there were previous earthly experiences together. Then there's another kind of meeting in which we describe people sort of outwardly, and we can even generalize about whole groups on the basis of this one meeting. And we don't dream about the person, but that's generally a new kind of karma. And that's the portal of the sun. That's a different experience altogether. And he says quite a bit about that, actually. And actually, one's angel is in the spiritual world and kind of shines through that encounter, so that one can actually speak with the angel and make new karma in that way. You really should read it. It's really quite extraordinary.
Yep, I want to read that lecture, those three lectures. Thank you.
Is that it?
Seems to be it on the chat question. So, David?
Fred, am I thinking right in the last address where Steiner talked some about the reincarnations of John the Baptist?
Yes. All right. Sorry, were you done with your question?
I just wanted to make sure that the tie was thinking of the right title.
Yeah, he talks about the spirit who was Elijah. John the Baptist, although, well, there's something to be said about that, but then Raphael and Novalis, right? Those are all one individuality. Elijah, let's say John, Raphael, and Novalis. He talks mostly about the incarnations of John as John and as Raphael. There, he has quite a bit to say about Raphael. The extraordinary thing is that he actually doesn't say John the Baptist in the final address, but he says that this individuality was actually John the Evangelist, and that's a deep mystery. Some of the anthroposophists who heard him speak just assumed, because he was very sick, in fact, he didn't get the lecture, they assumed that he misspoke, but I don't think that he did.
You got to the heart of my question there. I wasn't sure which John was being referred to,
right?
And if the other one had ever been, the reincarnations had ever been described.
I'm sorry, just the very end of your question again.
And if he is talking about John the Evangelist there and the reincarnations, if John the Baptist, his reincarnations had ever been described.
Well, it's very mysterious. There seems to have been some kind of movement where, of course, John the Baptist dies first and then becomes a kind of overarching figure in whom John the Evangelist participates. So there's a kind of merger of individualities or something like that. You know, Prokofiev wrote a little booklet about those, about the last address and about that question in particular. I recommend it very strongly. He makes a compelling argument.
Thank you.
All three Johns.
Go ahead.
I think we're out of time, correct?
Yes.
So, yes. That was wonderful, Fred, and good questions from the group. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Really great. And so our next meeting will be a study call in April, and look for that information. We'll be working with which lecture? Oh my gosh.
One
of a Western approach to reincarnation and karma. So, Lisa, will you close us with a verse, please?
I'm going to make a little pitch and then I'm going to shift. So I just want to invite everyone next Wednesday to listen to the upcoming webinar that Laura will be hosting, three people, including Chester Davison, who will be discussing the founding of the Maitreya branch of North Texas. And so encourage people to listen in on that. And we're shifting it over to Hazel, who's got a special new verse. So Hazel?
I wanted to read this verse that Camille really recommended. And it's another one that we've been working with. The wishes of the soul are sprouting. The deeds of the will wax and grow. The fruits of life are ripening. I feel my destiny. My destiny finds me. I feel my star. My star finds me. I feel my goals in life. My goals in life are finding me. My soul and the world are one great unity. Life grows more radiant about me. Life grows more challenging for me. Life grows more abundant within me.
Thank you, Hazel. And thank you, Alberto, for managing all of the technological hosting. That's really helpful. And for those who, there's a couple of quotes here. Where can that quote be found? And I'm thinking the wishes of the soul. Hazel, could we just say that we'll post that on the anthroposophy.org central region website? So that was one of the questions that came in too, is like, where will this information be posted? It's on www.anthroposophy.org, then pull down the groups and branches menu on the top and select central region. That is the page that the central region has been updating with information about our projects and stuff, and you can find past notes and transcripts from different types of events there. But Alberto will work to get this information up by Saturday morning, and we will work to include that last verse.
I can also put it up on the Facebook page, which we still need to change the title of.
Yeah.
Which we will.
We will. Great.
Thanks, everyone.
Again, thank you all so much for participating in this call.
Big thanks to Fred.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Good night.
Night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Hi, Carl.
Hi. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Renata.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
There he is. Oops, nice job.